All right, well, good afternoon. I hope you're still awake and not hungry since we continue talking about food right now. And as Jennifer mentioned, I'm going to talk about the counterpart or the second arm of this study where we examined not only food stores but also restaurants. So a lot of what I'm going to be referring to has already been described by Jennifer. I'm going to go a little bit faster over the methods, particularly the sections that are common for both the food store and the restaurant part of the study. I have no disclosures in terms of conflicts of interest to report. And the study aims, this is a parallel study to examine the disparities in the restaurant food environment, because we believe it's important to understand sort of like the two sides of this equation. We need to know what people have access to in terms of places where they can buy food to prepare at home, but also what are the characteristics of the places where they can go to eat, to buy prepared food, or whether they eat it there or take it home. So the factors that we examine disparities by are the same: demographics, socioeconomic factors, and urbanicity. And a little bit about the rationale for examining restaurants, although this audience is probably very familiar already with this topic. But let's just refresh our minds with some statistics. As we know, more than 30% of total calories that we consume are actually contributed by foods that we don't prepare at home. These are foods that are prepared outside the home in restaurants or other settings. The use of restaurants, and especially fast food restaurants, has increased astronomically over the last decades. And these statistics might be already a little bit old, but let's just say that about one in four adults consume at least one fast food meal a day. So they really play an important role, if only because of the frequency with which we eat at these settings. And also, studies are showing, with more solid evidence, that eating at restaurants is associated with higher caloric intake and poorer nutritional quality. So we tend to eat more fat, more sugar, and less nutritious foods when we eat outside the home compared to the foods that we prepare and eat in the home. There's some evidence, in particular about the role of fast food restaurants, that suggests that living in places that are proximal to fast food restaurants or living in areas that have a higher density of fast food restaurants is correlated with visits to these outlets. So the more of these outlets we have in our neighborhood, the more visits per week or on other frequency basis we do tend to show, the more often we do visit these outlets. And also the poorer the quality of our diets is. Some research has also pointed at an association between visiting fast food restaurants with high frequency and weight gain in longitudinal research with adults. There's also evidence that the higher the number of fast food meals per week, the greater the caloric intake. So it all kind of points at the association between proximity, density of this type of outlets, and conditions that would be favorable for the development of overweight and obesity. In terms of disparities in the restaurant food environment, people have conducted research that has examined either the community environment or the consumer environment, and less often both at the same time. Community and consumer environment, these are terms that have been used to refer to community would be what people have access to in terms of the number of restaurants or the types of restaurants that are in a particular neighborhood or geographic unit. And some research has shown that there are differences, significant differences in the average distance to fast food restaurants or the density of restaurants, in terms depending on whether people live in urban or rural areas, depending on income, depending on the racial makeup of the neighborhoods. Less research has focused on the consumer environment, and this is about what people can find inside the outlets that are present in a certain area. So We know a little bit less about that, but some research has shown that outlets that are found in low-income or minority-dense areas tend to have less availability of healthy foods such as fruits, vegetables, juice. In a study that used NEMS, the same instrument that we are using for this study, they also found that outlets in these neighborhoods tend to score worse, and they have fewer healthy menu offerings. So there is some evidence out there, but there is also some there are some limitations, some gaps in the research that has been conducted. Oftentimes has been restricted in terms of geographic units and hasn't covered extensive areas, such as what we try to do here by looking at the entire state of Wisconsin. The focus has been heavily on fast food restaurants, and although they play a significant role, it's also important to keep in mind that other restaurants are also important and contribute to the calories that we consume. And in fact, for instance, fast casual restaurants are considered the type of restaurant that is growing faster in the U.S. these days. And we know less about the role that they play in the obesity epidemic. As Jen mentioned, there is also, to some extent, limited use of ground truth data by relying on inventories or GIS or other sort of already existing data. We're kind of missing the high turnover and variation that exists on the restaurant industry. So research has to really go a step farther and obtain more valid data by really visiting the outlets and making sure what's in the inventory is out there and is the same type of restaurant as the one that is described as. Often we have relied on aggregate level data, and that is providing some good evidence at the ecological level, but we know a little less about how individual or household level data are associated with better or worse food environments in this case at the restaurant level. So the methods Jen already described, so this is the same except for we went to all the restaurants that were included within those 2 or 5 mile buffers, depending on whether it was an urban or rural community. And our field raters enumerated, mapped, and assessed all of these restaurants by going in there and using a validated tool to assess the overall quality of the restaurant, food environment, and some key dimensions that I will talk about. We aggregated the data at the buffer level and linked the data from each buffer to the household that buffer corresponded to. So the NEMS, or the Nutrition Environment Measurement Survey restaurant version, was also developed by Karen Glanz and others, and really looks at some important dimensions of the food environment, such as, for instance, is there nutrition information available and to what extent? So restaurants can get up to 12 points, depending on how much information is available to guide consumers on how to make healthier choices. Another dimension refers to signage. Are there signs that are promoting healthy or unhealthy choices? So the healthier the signs that are present in the restaurant, the higher the number of points for signage that restaurants can get. Another section looks at what we might consider healthy basics, things that we might not find on a menu but are sort of like most of the times available in a restaurant, things like chips or bread or juice or milk, and are those the healthier versions or are those the regular less healthy ones? Then looking at the menu, we can also consider another dimension, which is the presence of healthier interests and to what extent we can find any or a large number of healthier entrees, salads, and also how healthy are the drinks? Are there fruits and vegetables that are not fried available, and things like that. Finally, the instrument also considers facilitators for healthy eating, such as, for instance, if there are reduced size portions available, if there are notations on the menu that encourage to try healthier options. Then barriers, as in, for instance, whether there are large portions that have high numbers of calories or things like all you can eat that is might be encouraged in the restaurant, and price incentives for healthy eating. such as a splitting fee or higher cost for a smaller versus a large item. So aggregating all of this, you can get an overall restaurant score. And then also by looking at the kids' menu, if available for a restaurant, you can also get a sense of how healthy the food environment for, in this case, kids' meals is in the restaurant. So we consider also the average and the highest or the best score for the buffer and looked at how the scores differ by the socio-demographic and economic factors that we mentioned at the beginning of the talk. So the predictors were the same, statistical analysis were the same, just univariate first and then regression models. And this is a snapshot of what we found. So in this case, we cover almost 2,000 outlets, and these were distributed around 37 counties and 294 census block groups across the state of Wisconsin. So almost 40% were sit-down, and a third of the restaurants were fast food restaurants. 11% were fast casual, and then we had another share of restaurants that were classified on a more heterogeneous kind, and we labeled as other. The household characteristics are the same and have been described in the previous talk. And this gives you just a very briefly what were the average number of outlets within the buffer. What I will point out here is that on average, each household had about 26 restaurants within their 2 mile or 5 mile buffer, depending on urban or rural. So high numbers of restaurants on average. And the majority were sit down or fast food. Now, for the scores that we got, and here again, as Jen did, we're showing the average score, I don't know if I can point at this, which is the greenish bar, and then the best score. So if we consider how does the best restaurant in the buffer do, what you see is that there is a huge distance between the best and what you can get, you know, the full spectrum of the NEMS restaurant instrument. So the maximum score could be 90, but really the best that we find across the different buffers is 58. So huge room for improvement. And the same can be said about the individual dimensions that we looked at. So we also compare how the scores differ by type of restaurant. And for all that is said about fast food restaurants, and obviously they have a bad reputation, but when you use NEMS restaurants, with this particular tool, we don't find really evidence that they have a worse food environment in terms of the total score. In fact, they are the ones that get the best score. And also, we believe this is partly driven by the information, which is usually more available in this type of restaurants, and also by menu options. And on average, they tend to include more healthy entrees compared to more expensive sit-down restaurants. So differences by gender, we didn't really find much. There were some differences in the univariate analysis, but these were lost when we adjusted for other things. In terms of the presence of children, what I will say, and I'm not showing the parameters from the regression models, but I'll just describe it quantitatively. We tend to see more restaurants where children live, and we see also better information scores. So it's not a bad result for households with children. Young adults tend to have also better indicators of the food environment. They tend to have more restaurants, but also better restaurant scores, indicating that they tend to have more information and more healthier menu options. By education, as Jen mentioned, we also found that for some reason, mixed education households tend to do a little worse. And so do households where nobody has a college degree compared to households where everybody, all the adults, have a college degree. Race and ethnicity, at first, without adjusting for other things, we found that households with minorities had more fast food restaurants, which has been reported in the literature, but also better food environments. When we adjusted, the differences washed out, and we didn't really find evidence that minorities have worse environments, but also, obviously, they don't have it better either. By income, a clear pattern was found that households that are poorer tend to have worse restaurant scores, and particularly they have less information in restaurants and fewer healthy menu options. And by urbanicity, a gradient indicating that the more urbanized the area where the households are located, the better the restaurant scores is, was also observed. So urban folks tend to have more restaurants, but they also tend to have better indicators of information, signage, menu options that tend to be more favorable for healthy eating. So finally, to conclude, because it's a lot of information, what we found is that in Wisconsin, the restaurant environment differs significantly according to factors that can be classified as demographic, social, and geographic. And when we adjust to try to understand a little bit more what drives some of these differences, what we might say in a very simplified way is that households with young urban residents tend to be in neighborhoods with more but also healthier restaurants. That's what we see for Wisconsin. And households with less educated adults, with poorer household income levels, tend to have more but less healthy restaurants. There are implications for targeting certain areas with different type of interventions that we could talk about, although they're not the subject of this presentation. And for limitations, Jen touched on some of them, and I guess first and foremost, we have to keep in mind this is focused on Wisconsin. It might not reflect the environment in other states. Perhaps some of the other Midwestern states would look not very different, but we might not extrapolate much farther than that. And I have to emphasize that we didn't have much racial or ethnic diversity in the sample, and we have to be cautious on how we interpret these findings. We didn't look at other settings. We looked at households and what's around the household, but obviously adults are part of different organizations. We didn't look at workplaces and what the environment of the workplaces look like. We didn't look at schools and the environment surrounding schools, and all of those would be definitely very important to explain also what people eat and the decisions that they make. The size of the buffers perhaps is somewhat arbitrary. We consulted with experts in the field. We looked at what studies had done, and we came up with something that seemed reasonable and seemed to be some expert agreement on, but can be debated as well. And perhaps I will end, because we're running out of time, just saying that how we interpret the measures of the food environment can also be subject to debate. The NEMS restaurant, we believe, is a good tool. It really reflects a lot of different dimensions of the food environment you can find in a restaurant. But of course, the extent to which it's going to reflect that lived experience that we talked about, and whether there are things that are not measured that are also going to affect the quality of the diet that you can get by eating in a certain place, is something that obviously I think still is in need of refinement. And with that, I will take questions, because I don't want to take a lot more of the time, and want to let the next speaker to go on. Yes? Right. So the first question, I think it'd be a great idea, and I don't know of any initiatives to make those scores available, but I think, you know, it would be something perhaps that could be explored and that could provide some incentives for outlets to become a little more healthy. We have used NEMS as a measure of change for a healthy eating intervention. So that's what I can tell you, but we haven't gone as far as publicizing the scores. Although I can tell you that when we shared the results back with the outlets that participated in our study, in our intervention, they were very curious and interested to know how they did compared to other outlets. So there you go. Maybe there's something to do in that line. Your second question, again, was?
Is
that
the measure of the information?
Yeah. Well, for instance, for the information dimension of the NEMS, it's actually about whether there is information that can guide your decision, for instance, calorie information or sodium information. So is objective in theory, and then it will help consumers make decisions. There are other dimensions that really are tied to the healthiness. So, for instance, for the menu options that could be classified as healthy, there are some nutritional criteria in terms of calories, in terms of percent of fat and percent of saturated fat. So, yes, it should reflect healthiness. Yeah. Thank you. Other questions? So we worked with our NPH, and we recruited a number of students who were very interested in the food environment, and because part of our program requires that students do a field practice, they do engage in an applied project, we benefited from their enthusiasm and their time, and we had upwards of 10, 11 students who were trained and were sent with, obviously, you know, all of their expenses paid by for the project to all the corners of across the state. In fact, one of our students made a video story that I guess I could make available for those who are interested, based on her experience going as a mystery shopper, almost like, to these food outlets and collecting the information. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't probably use the mystery shopper term, but they didn't usually inform the restaurants of what they were doing necessarily. They had their instruments, and if approached, they would explain this is what they were doing, but they got some suspicious looks from the owners. Questions? I can happy to talk later if, yeah.
I actually have a question.
I think that this suggests a number of options, but I think we also have to be careful with going too fast, recommending blank point policies without knowing a little more about some of the evidence, and especially without including the voices of those who might be the, you know, subjects that will, you know, have to implement those policies. So I think zoning is something that has been talked about substantially, and I don't think so far we have evidence, for instance, that those kind of policies translate into lower obesity rates or even a change in consumption patterns. There's recent evidence from the South Los Angeles county where they implemented a zoning ordinance to limit the number of fast food restaurants, and the results are a little bit discouraging because nothing really is showing up. I personally think it would be better to provide incentives for the outlets to offer more healthy options and to promote those options and to make them more appealing. And availability, I think if we can impact through policies, but in a way that is not adding burden to perhaps the owners or the managers of little corner stores, but really making it visible for them, I'm sure they would be happy to be part of that. But you can just create a policy without giving the means to people, you know, for implementing that policy. That'd be my take on it.
I would second that. The policies and incentives and finances being provided to especially small corner stores or convenience stores to provide more fresh fruits and vegetables is what I would hope that people do.
That's my email address. I'm happy to connect by email or later after the talk if you have any questions. Thank you.